if you've Googled something, the search results that have popped up have been AI generated and curated for you. If you have a streaming service like Netflix or Hulu, the section that always says shows you might like is generated to you by AI.
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today we are joined by Dr. Todd Corpy. Todd is a pastor, missiologist, and church consultant. He is Dean of Digital Ministry Programs at Ascent College, assistant professor of Christian leadership at Fuller Theological Seminary, and worked in several capacities at One Hope, whose mission is to affect destiny by providing God's word to all the children and youths of the world. He also serves as the lead researcher of the Digital Mission Consortia, a collaborative research initiative exploring the frontier of digital ministry. We are here to talk about his new book, AI Goes to Church. Thank you so much for being here, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so glad that you are here. And I think you are the first speaker who is going to talk about AI. I've been thinking about this for some time. I'm a senior pastor here in Central New Jersey, but also I serve with Liberty. And one of the things that we had to deal with last year or a year before last year was AI, how to deal with the people or students submitting their papers generated by some sort of AI tool. But anyways, yeah. I'm very excited. I'm so happy that you are here. But let's start with the very simple question. I often ask this question to my guests. And the question is, tell us a little bit about you. And the reason behind that is I want to make sure people get to know you first before they understand your heart or your ministry. So let's start there. Let's connect with our audience a little bit by sharing your family life.
Yeah, so my wife and I actually met in college, in Bible college, at a small Assemblies of God school, which is now has since become a part of Evangel University in Missouri. So I've been married for 17 years to my wife, Tara, and we have three daughters, Lydia, Anna, and Benson. I come from a pastoral ministry background alongside my wife. So we've served together in churches all around the country. We've church planted, been missions pastors, young adult pastors, all sorts of stuff. So that's kind of where kind of our background in a 30-second, you know, tweetable. We're native both to Michigan. So I'm rooting for my Detroit Lions yet again this year, hoping that they pull off a good season. And, but yeah, we now live in the west suburbs of Chicago, just a little bit outside of Wheaton College.
That's awesome. Thank you so much again for telling us a little bit about your family. Now let's talk about your book. In your book, AI Goes to Church, you tell us about your love of science fiction, Star Trek, the Next Generation in particular. How has that shaped your journey to technology and church leadership?
Yeah, I grew up as a Trekkie. You know, my dad watched Star Trek: The Next Generation. I fell in love with, you know, as a child of the late 80s, early 90s, I fell in love with kind of this vision of the future, the expectation of possibilities and things of that sort, which is really what science fiction at its core is kind of meant to convey, whether it's utopian, like as in the case of Star Trek, or dystopian, as in the case of, you know, I think of a whole host of plays and movies and whatnot, iRobot and things of that sort that kind of tell of the potential end of the world because of technology. But it gave me an expectation of what possibility could be in a way that kind of also informed that reality itself or the way that we perceive reality can be different than perhaps we believe at this time. But later on, as I grew, as I went and pursued theological education, I began my specific field is missiology. So really looking at the intersection of Christianity and culture and how to best communicate and embody the gospel within the specific cultural context to which God's called us. And one of the things that I noticed was there's almost kind of a, and allow me to use this word and then explain, but kind of a prophetic kind of shape to the way that a lot of our popular media, whether it movies, plays, television shows like Star Trek and others, have in our society. So there's a sense in which kind of the poets and the writers paint a vision of a possible future of the way things could look. And the technologists, who are often sci-fi nerds or big into those kind of depictions, often develop technology in a way that those science fiction predictions almost are kind of guideposts, or like N.T. Wright says, signposts pointing into a fog. And so we need only look at, you know, the iPad or something like that and see, you know, back in, you know, 1989, when Star Trek The Next Generation was in its first run, they had, you know, what were literally called pads, P-A-D-D-S, were, you know, kind of a prophetic foretelling of a technology to come, so to speak. Now, that isn't always the case, but it does cast vision for our future in a way that not only do technologists embody that or kind of follow that in right. certain ways, but it also shows kind of the angst, the longings of our culture. It's a way to read our culture in the present moment by the kind of media that we that our popular culture produces. So you see a lot right now, specifically in movies and things of that sort, that has a very dystopian sort of shape to it as it pertains right. to the subject of AI, because latent within us is kind of this simultaneous hope that AI is also going to, you know, automate the boring bits, that a robot's going to eventually do my, you know, laundry and do my dishes and all that kind of stuff for me. But there's also that kind of deep fear that, you know, it's going to take over the world and I'm going to end up doing the laundry while, you know, it sips sweet tea on the back porch kind of thing.
I love the way you are connecting your own culture and the culture of the era you were brought up. And not only that, I think it continues to be that feeling. Even church is made up of people. People are cultural people. And I think that brings all of that comes into the church. But I love the way you're looking at your faith, your theology, missiology, and you're connecting with that. And that is also evident even in the title of your book, AI Goes to Church. It's a great title for your new book. Very timely, intriguing. I think it's very attractive title. Churches are sometimes a little late in adapting new technology. What might be hesitation in using artificial intelligence, that is AI, in church? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it depends on what we refer to when we refer to church. If we're referring to the capital C church to include kind of all Christians globally scattered throughout the nations of the world, there is a sense in which we kind of talk about the church being behind the times. We often speak of the church as being behind the times in relation to, you know, being behind kind of musical trends or cultural fads. You know, often in, you know, well-meaning churches will adopt kind of a, you know, a meme or kind of real fad on Instagram or TikTok after it's kind of its half-life has already passed. But as it pertains to technology, especially when we talk about the world of missions and evangelistic work, the church has actually been at the forefront of tech innovation throughout its history. Mm-hmm. When we look at the New Testament, we don't often think of things like roads and letter writing as technology, but in a very technical sense, those were that was the technology of the day. And as soon as the diasporas from the stoning of Stephen to others began to disperse Christians throughout the world, we see Christians leverage that technology as a way of staying connected despite being scattered throughout the world. And so this desire to leverage technology for connectedness actually goes back in our history for a very long time. When we look at the evolution of communications technology, like the printing press, obviously, the very first book that was printed, of course, was the Bible. Early radio, especially from, you know, my tradition of Pentecostals, but not just Pentecostals, Baptists and others leveraged radio very early on for the sake of communicating the gospel, and then television and so forth. So there is kind of a sense in which part of the church is very actually kind of forward thinking in terms of how can we leverage every possible means to be able to reach people with the gospel. And then there's this also part that is, you know, very much the case that, you know, we are kind of lagging behind as it pertains to the local church and thinking innovatively about that. And I think that having been a pastor myself, having led a church and been on staffs of churches, a lot of times we would tend to maybe look at, pastors tend to be more reluctant because of this or that. I think some of it just comes down to pace. Pastors are busy. Sundays come around with an alarming regularity. And so to be able to introduce something that is, especially something with a steep learning curve, sometimes like artificial intelligence, is just not always high on the priority list. And I do think that, though, as it pertains to digital technology more generally, a lot of pastors are concerned, and understandably so, that if I lean too much into digital forms of ministry, whether it be broadcasting my services or whatever, that people are not going to want to show up in person. I refer to that as the myth of the great replacement, because it is actually a myth. There have been several studies before COVID and since that actually show that the people who are engaging your live streams are those who are most engaged in your kind of the lifeblood of your church in general. They may be on vacation or something like that. There is also a subset that's worth considering where the people that are engaging kicking the tires on, as it were, on your church, of trying to figure out, are you a safe place to show up to in person before? So it's not they're choosing this or that, but it's a precursor to showing up to your front door at for the first time. And so I think that it's important that we see kind of the duality there, that there are some genuine fears within the local church. Another is that people misrepresent themselves online. I call it the myth of faux authenticity, people aren't who they say they are. But the reality is that we have that in-person forms of church too. You know, we've all, if we're honest, we've all had that moment where we've been on the drive to church and been fighting as a family or scolding our kids or whatever, or bickering with our spouse, only to show up and put that, you know, bright smiling face on and sit in the pew. And you know, all of a sudden that fight is gone. People misrepresent themselves in physical forms of church as well. But there's actually evidence that shows both secular studies and the experience of churches that are pioneering in digital spaces, that digital technology actually often fast tracks people to be more authentic and open about their struggles than what they would be necessarily in a face-to-face conversation, because the felt risk of being open and transparent is less that it, when you're communicating online. So there is a portion of the church which is very forward thinking, kind of aggressive in moving things forward for the sake of communicating the gospel. But then there's within the local church kind of a very real need to look at recovering and being informed by some of that, but then also addressing some of those barriers that may prohibit churches or pastors from wanting to kind of embrace technology.
Yeah. And I like the way there are so many different subjects you touch under one subject, technology. I like the way you started with just comparing the church with the local church, because I do see the church advancing in technology, as a matter of fact, inventing technology for the sake of the gospel, and especially the printing press being the first big think in technological world, I guess, because they wanted to print Bibles and get that out. And I agree that we need to create both digital spaces for people, not only for the reason that you brought up, but also I think there is a certain portion of our congregation that is simply not able to join us in person. And this has become a blessing to them, whether they are elderly or bedridden, or far, and they want to keep their connection with that local church. So I think there are so many benefits. I agree with that. It does add a layer of a protectiveness when people are not ready. It's easy. When you're sending an email, it's easy to just put it out there. but it's hard to confront the person in person. And I understand those things. But I think what causes us some anxiety is the idea of AI. Earlier, I mentioned that I have the privilege of teaching at Liberty, and I think that's the same thing. You want to use computers. Now, computers are technology. It was the same thing when I was born and raised in Pakistan. So I remember being in high school and teachers being so not okay with the calculator even, right? They wanted you to calculate with your mind.
Yeah.
So now, forget about calculator. Nobody talks about calculator. Now, computers are also secondary. It's like it's moving forward, forward, forward. And I think in the church, there is clear hesitation about, and it's not even clear hesitation. I think people are not even investigating what AI is for the future of the church, how it can contribute. So my question becomes more about the AI technology, artificial intelligence itself. So now, yes, broadly, computer itself is that because it's calculating for us. But now it can write things for you. For when we talk about a student typing and doing research on that computer versus telling the computer or in a certain app, hey, write this this paper on this subject and discuss these elements in there. And boom, you have something. I don't know in the future, how far in the future, how near future that would be okay, just the way calculator became okay, a computer became okay. But in the church, that's where my struggle is. How to discuss this topic in the church? How is it used, AI technology, AI is used in churches currently and in other avenues of reaching people with the gospel? That's what I'm wondering about.
Yeah, from what I've seen, we actually just completed a study at the Digital Mission Consortia on AI adoption practices. And one of the things that we found was AI use tends to fall within, or AI applications that are developed for churches and ministries, I just referred to it as ministry AI, tend to fall within kind of several basic parameters. One, which is overwhelmingly the most dominant, is content curation and utilization. So I think of applications like Sermon Shots or Pulpit AI, where a pastor can upload their sermon after the fact, the actual video, and it will do the work of, you know, basically a whole content production team and splice it into reels for social media. You can take that sermon and create a book outline from it, or small group curriculum and stuff. So in that regard, and there are a lot of questions around, you know, pastors and using AI for sermon preparation. But thinking about after the sermon is done, throughout most of Christian history, you know, you think about the sermons that you've read from, you know, the canon of Christian history, the great sermons of the faith. Those are from just minuscule fraction of the amount of sermons that have been actually preached in mm-hmm. Christian history, most of whom that it was a one and done. It was preached, people heard it, maybe they discussed it, and then it was forgotten. And that doesn't mean that's not a testament or a condemnation of its faithfulness or its anointing or anything like that. But what those kind of tools allow is for there to be kind of a reverberation of the effect of that sermon, to be able to use it in additional contexts, especially when it comes to like taking clips and stuff like that and putting it on social media. It creates opportunities for actually your people to dialogue about that sermon after the case with their friends, to share it and things of that sort, because we are a very kind of creative kind of culture now where people can take that stuff and kind of run with it. So so that content production and curation piece is one space. Another, which a lot of pastors are kind of on the innovating side of things, is in the area of translation. Especially in a multi-ethnic city where there are a host of different languages. I live in a community which has 80,000 Polish immigrants, and I don't speak a single word of Polish. Some of my Polish friends have tried to teach me, and I just fail miserably. However, there are multiple applications that allow me to take that same clip or whatever, or that sermon or whatever, and translate it into a language that I don't necessarily speak. I know of one guy in the Raleigh-Durham area that actually launched a Spanish campus. They have a multi-site video venue-based church. And so they use real-time AI translations to translate the sermon into Spanish, and then people a part of the congregation that are native Spanish speakers will staff and support that campus. So there are ways in which that AI is doing just tremendous things in the world of Bible translation. There's a lot of hopefulness and anticipation of actually taking what we thought was going to take an additional century of translating the remaining languages that do not have a translation of the Bible in their heart language, and fast tracking that to be a matter of decades, with the appropriate human checks and balances and stuff in place of that. Outside of that, a lot of the benefits currently that a lot of pastors are taking up are kind of what I refer to as automating the boring bits. That's the administrative kind of backend stuff of productivity softwares that have artificial intelligence woven into them, automating different facets of follow-ups and things of that sort, or administrative tasks. But I think we're really at a point right now, again, kind of tying back to that Sunday's coming around with a lot of regularity. We're kind of just scratching the surface of the potential of what AI can do in specifically within the local church.
I'm glad that we are talking about this because the way you are explaining the use of the way you are currently observing the use of AI in the ministry context, I think that makes perfect sense because what you're telling me is you are taking away the 80% of that non-essential the day-to-day work that doesn't produce much. And you're giving the pastor or the staff that 20% does produce work, and they can focus on that. So what I'm hearing from is it's not that you need to start using AI and tell them like a creative message on whatever text you are using. You are telling them like, no, still seek after God, still look at your audience, still pray and ask the Spirit to guide you and show you and reveal that because the word of God, I think that's the struggle is if the word of God is the living word of God, then it has to speak. It has to illuminate. Only God can illuminate that to a person, and the person has to approach to that word. And I think that's where the struggle is, why so much hesitation. But the way you were explaining about automating and behind the scene administrative work that is being done and not wasting what you prepped already or the investment that you made, not wasting that, making one time, rather using it for future generation and creating in a way that says a greater reach, better reach. I actually love that translation one. I like that because in my own congregation, I have a few people that can use that. So after offline, I'm going to ask you what that software is so we can look into that too. But that's a really good answer. And I'm hoping that the audience is listening to this. Those who are listening to this podcast are not just only listening, but also gaining some new knowledge so they can share with other people. Now, the idea of artificial intelligence invokes feelings from optimisms, which I see in you, I can totally see it, to skepticism, to fear, right? So I am between optimism and skepticism. I'm not completely skeptic, I'm not completely optimist, but I am not afraid, that's for sure. But my question is, would you please, or rather, a request is, would you please explain what AI is and what it can and cannot do at the present time?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think actually the answer can provide a bit of quelling to some of the fears that some have. because ChatGPT kind of stormed onto the popular stage and kind of commanded all of our attention. And then there's been this flood of different applications. Every time I open social media, if I scroll for long enough, I find an ad advertising some new AI powered application. But the reality is that artificial intelligence has been around in various capacities for nearly three quarters of a century. In fact, the term AI was first used in the 1950s, and the test by which we measure the sophistication of AI, which we refer to as the Turing test, the exact year escapes me. I think it was 1956 was when that test was established. And we can kind of trace through, and I do this in the book, kind of tracing through the evolution of AI. There was kind of a surge of AI development in the late 80s, early 90s, and then it kind of hit a lull until really the last 20 years or so. There's been a lot of rapid development. And then now, you know, with some of the applications that we all have heard of and stuff like ChatGPT, that's kind of had a snowball effect. So it has been around. You have used it, even if you don't think that you have. Just if you've Googled something, the search results that have popped up have been AI generated and curated for you. If you have a streaming service like Netflix or Hulu, the section that always says shows you might like is generated to you by AI. If you have social media, you are engaging with AI on a regular basis because AI determines what you see in your timeline for better or for worse. And we've probably all had that kind of moment where we've had a conversation about, oh, we need to make sure we pick up, you know, new, you know, blinds for the windows or something like that. And would you know, you open up Instagram and it's because AI is listening and happy to make those recommendations for you. So it's been around. You have used it. The way that it looks now is what we think of when we talk about AI at a popular level is what is referred to as generative AI, which is an artificial intelligence's capacity to take large amounts of information, synthesize it, curate it, and to spit out concrete results in a way that is much more sophisticated than it was even, you know, 5 years ago. But there are, of course, theorists that theorize about what the future of AI could look like. There's kind of this looming theory of what's called a singularity event, which is where artificial intelligence is essentially not only self-aware, it's aware of its own existence, but it also possesses the capacity to expand outside of its given parameters. And the easy way to think about that is, again, going back to Star Trek, The Next Generation, Lieutenant Commander Data was the embodiment of what that looks like. You know, he was made to, you know, function as a crew member on the Starship Enterprise, but found, you know, how many episodes were given in that timeline of him exploring poetry and love and friendship and, you know, owning a cat and all of this kind of stuff. That's an example of what theorists are thinking. There may come a point where that's the case. So, but at its core, AI is fundamentally, especially right now, it's a mirror. It is one, it's measured against the intelligence referred to is not an intelligence that AI itself possesses, but its capacity to mimic human intelligence. So in a sense, it is a mirror of our own intelligence as a species. And it also is a mirror in the sense that it shows us kind of the best and worst of ourselves. We see that in examples just a couple of weeks from us recording this. There was an example of the AI bot on X, formerly known as Twitter, Grok, kind of getting commandeered in the algorithm and becoming kind of essentially a functional neo-Nazi bot. Microsoft had a similar experience on Twitter a few years ago. It took less than, I think it was 36 hours for it to start, you know, espousing all of this kind of craziness. There are biases in AI and hiring practices and policing and things of that sort. So even though we kind of think of it as like this, like, objective, neutral thing, it's not. It actually shows us kind of who we are as a species and both the good, our creative potential, and the not so good of the dark, seedier parts of who we are. So I think that there's a good, I don't think fear is the right response. I also, however, don't think an over optimism and just kind of uncritical adoption of it is healthy either. I think a cautious optimism, a kind of tempered optimism is a good place to be, while also recognizing that anytime that we integrate something like this, especially something as significant like this to kind of our human existence, it's important for us to ask the larger questions that are sometimes not always thought of when all we're doing is thinking, oh, well, this is going to make my life faster. It's going to make my life more efficient. So I'm going to do this. We have to ask deeper questions about what it means for our humanity, what it means for relationship, what it means for our capacity to be present with others as we adopt these kind of applications in our lives.
Yeah, I think we have just begun to discuss in when it comes to church, all these things. These discussions are still, I think, in the initial phases with even the larger body outside the church. But in the church, we are way, way, way behind. Join us next time when Todd Corpy talks more about AI and how it affects our Christian life, Christian ministry, and challenges and things that we should watch out for. Thank you so much for being on the show again. That was Dr. Todd Corpy. And thank you to all our listeners. We could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at oururbanvoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcast.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.